We head into the dark subterranean tunnels of the Asylum Films once more, this time in advance of a film that they plan to mock slash bust. Will a riff of Cloverfield, a film cloaked in secrecy, work if they don't even know what the monster they're copying looks like? Find out alongside us. This is Kaiju vs. History Monster.
Welcome back to Kaiju vs. History. This is your shaky cam holding sister, Mr. Miles. And joining me is a Japanese grandpa who is too sweet for this world, Patrick. Patrick, how are you doing this week?
Hello, Miles. How's it going? Miles, question for you, but kind of hypothetical. Is it that hard to make a movie?
It is certainly a question for this week.
We're going to watch a lot of Asylum films because I do a lot of silly kind of kaiju knockoff stuff. But I feel like a broken clock is right at least twice a day. Are we going to get out of 24 Asylum movies or whatever, how many we're watching, two good ones at some point?
Well, I mean, good's a loaded term. I mean, I know there has been some like unironic love for their Transformers mockumentary or mockbuster.
Transmorphers, yeah.
Yeah, I've heard that one. I actually haven't seen that one, but I've heard it's very fun.
We'll do that when we get bored and have to do the Transformers movies.
I've seen a lot of their shark related movies because my fiance is a fan of the shark exploitation.
When they're in tornado format or hurricane format.
I will say she does not have much tolerance for CGI sharks. So,
oh wow,
especially
that's the wrong movie to watch.
Well, especially Asylum CGI sharks. Like she'll get a couple chuckles, but like, I mean, my favorite is like the ghost shark one where the kid's like getting like pushed back against the slip and slide. That's a pretty famous meme.
We're talking about this because, of course, we're looking at 2008's Asylum film. Quote, monster, end quote. The film is just called Monster this week.
Yeah, and there are good films that we're going to watch that share a similar title. And I got to say, like, even with the good films, I'm like, could you call it something else?
Well, you know, we're going to talk about it when we talk about the movie that this Cloverfield was almost called, and I think actually in other countries, it was called some version of Monstrous. Which is hilarious.
Yes. We'll definitely talk about that. Well, very soon. But yeah, this is obviously a mockbuster on Cloverfield and using, which is something I haven't talked a lot about on this show, using the found footage style and archetype, something that I'm a big fan and apologist for. I love found footage horror movies and genre movies.
We'll talk about it this week, I guess.
Yeah. We'll talk about a little bit this week, here's the thing. This is the kind of stuff that I have to sift through to get to the good stuff, because more often than not,
a lot of movies like this,
there are a lot of found footage movies because they're so cheap and easy to make that there's a lot of trash. Even in a genre like science fiction horror, where like you're likely going to see something terrible than good in just picking something out, found footage is like multiplier of 10 for that. And
yeah.
But even still, I love the format. I love the delivery system. And to answer your question, it shouldn't be that hard to make a good found footage movie. But we'll talk about it in a second. Before we get into this, Patrick, what, if anything, is in a title?
It's called Monster, and there's a monster technically in it, yes. For a little bit of time. But yeah, this translates into some different things in different languages when this movie came out on DVD in other parts of the world. It was called The Tokyo Monster in Poland. It was just called Terrible or The Creature in Hungary and Greece, and Earthquake in Tokyo in one German release of the film. But for the most part, it's Monster translated into the languages you'll find around the world. This movie does have a tagline or a subtitle in some instances where you'll find it, which is The Truth Will Finally Be Told.
Yeah, which is not too different from the Something Has Found Us of Cloverfield. But, right. Okay. So, Patrick, one of the tenets of a found footage or mockumentary movie, depending on the route you're going, is that this footage has been found and has been pieced together so that it can be presented to the general public. That is a core kind of common tenet amongst found footage movies, whether it's your Paranormal Activity, you know, this is an avenue so that the families of Micah and Katie can figure out like where they are. So
the Blair Witch Project is the Blair one Witch that
yes, you're
probably the first found footage that I watched. And yeah, okay. The conceit is that they found the footage for these missing hikers, and this is what you're watching.
And no one has done it in terms of that better than Blair Witch, because they made a whole like campaign of this duffel bag of tapes was found in the woods outside of Burkitt, Massachusetts.
I think I explained on this podcast that I watched it in like limited previews in New York when like the day before there was an article in, you know, like the New York Post or whatever terrible newspaper my father
wrote,
that was like talking about how this was a real documentary of like people that were lost. And I was expecting an actual like horror story of these people like killing each other in the woods, maybe, or something. And I was like, what?
It is still one of the best. I mean, it's one of those things you can only have done once. And it
very
is
very much lightning in a bottle.
Absolutely. If you're going to watch the Blair Witch Project now, I would highly recommend watching the feature length documentary that was on Sci-Fi Channel beforehand, Curse of the Blair Witch.
I think I watched that after I saw the movie, but yeah, that's a good one too.
It gives you wonderful context of what happened to these people. And so when you watch the footage,
and
it feels like a whole thing.
The documentary is in kind of like a Unsolved Mysteries style.
Yes. It's perfect. And
it's really good. This movie, I will say, does that very well. I think it does.
Well,
like,
so
footage, you know, and this is what actually happened on the ground in Japan.
Let me pause you right there. The reason I brought this up is because this movie, that's the one thing you should not do.
Oh, yeah. What's that?
It opens up with a film by.
Oh, yeah. Credits.
And the director's name. And I'm like, well, that deflates the entire presentation. Look, I bought the ticket. I know for a fact I am not watching real footage, but the entire presentation, the whole point of doing this is to kind of invite me into almost like a tabletop RPG situation where like you are going to a theater of the mind where this footage was found.
Yeah.
And by putting a film by at the top of the picture, you completely deflate that.
Yeah, I wasn't too invested there, but the actors and the characters have like similar names because they both share the same first name. So suspended disbelief because like I thought when it was like, you know, with Aaron and Sarah,
Aaron and Eric.
I was like, and then they started saying those were the character names. I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. But indeed, they just used the same first names, you know, maybe at a convenience or tie in with that.
Maybe I'm asking too much from the writer of Snakes on a Train, but just a little bit of effort. But
why you gotta do Eric Estenberg like that, or Eric Forsberg, which you can find on IMDb. I think he was listed as Estenberg for this film, but yeah, he also wrote Ghost Shark and Mega Piranha Miles, some classics of the asylum
films. I am sadly well aware of.
So found footage, I think, yeah, like you said, is easier, I think, to do for a lot of the films. Sometimes it's hard because you are asking actors to like hold cameras and things like that. You know, not often in the movies like this one, maybe that was the case most of the time. They do a lot of switching back and forth, and it's definitely the actors holding the camera. Then there was a documentary about the making of this film on the DVD, and I'm so sorry.
I apologize to her. Is it 5 minutes long?
Well, I apologize to our fans. I did not buy the DVD just to get into it. But the two main characters were instrumental in filming this film.
Yeah. And so a long story short, the worst people in LA that you know went to Japan.
It doesn't start out great for the characters.
No. It opens with this like
character,
this quote unquote PC joke. And I was like, oh, this is Oh no, don't. I'm actively rooting against you now because you are being low-key racist out the gate.
Starting the movie off, yeah, you have Sarah and Erin, who are the two main sisters of the character in the movie, and they're not terrible actors. Sarah played by Sarah Leaving, Erin by Erin Sullivan. They're not great. They're not bad though, which is interesting. They're just not given a lot of good stuff in this.
No,
this.
I mean, that's the thing is like, in certainly in moments I can actively say that they're being bad, but yeah, by and large, they're fine. They are given almost nothing. And but
when the vast majority of the movie is the two of them talking into the camera, they have to be good or it's bad, you know,
like right.
If there's nothing to write home about there, it's like,
And they're kind of, at least Sarah is kind of an asylum staple. Like, she keeps making these movies.
Sarah, I didn't recognize her, but she was Rita in King of the Lost World. So we've already seen her in Asylum.
Oh, you're right. I think we even mentioned that we'd be seeing her again.
Yeah, that's how memorable maybe some of these performances were. She comes back. She's in, I think, a couple of the Mega Shark movies. And then she returned, but I don't think as a character we've seen before. She was in the 2022 movie 2025 Armageddon. So she's been around.
Is that their end game?
That's their Avengers end game. Yeah, where all the kind of giant monsters and creatures come together. Oh, yes. Oh, yeah.
Oh,
because
boy.
Multiple monsters from their kaiju verse kind of come together, as well as Sharknado, I think.
Why not?
Aaron Lynch was only in Transmorphers, the other Asylum film we talked about, for Asylum, but she's gone on to work behind the scenes. She was a wardrobe assistant on Noah Baumbach's Marriage Story. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, I love that movie. So she did a great, great job helping out there. Yeah. There's some other cast members. They have like maybe 5 minutes of screen time in the entire film. It's really just those two girls that.
I think we talked about this
grandpa.
Off air, did they film in Japan or did they film in LA?
In the credits, they only list Los Angeles, but it is very obvious they're in Shibuya in Japan for at least the first 15 minutes of the film. They're like walking around Japan.
What they might have done is like gone for like a weekend and done a little location shooting, and then everything else is filmed in like, you know.
So, yeah, but I think it's only the first 15 minutes. I don't think any of the action sequences took place in Japan because probably they didn't have the filming rights. But yeah, it does feel very guerrilla then if maybe they only sent over the two actresses.
That's very possible because every Japanese actor who has a speaking role is clearly using a fake accent.
Yeah, but I was honestly extremely surprised that there were that many Japanese actors in the film.
I was too. But
part of that was me thinking, I was like, maybe they did film all this in Japan. And then I looked it up, of course. Films are just so inexpensive to make in Hollywood, LA. Even with
LA.
You know, LA. What are you doing here?
Well, we're doing the Letterkenny bit. So, yes, I mean, this whole thing is the tenet is the whole plot is that Sarah is going to Japan to film a documentary on global warming. And I guess specifically on like the Japanese like role in U.S. global relations, like completely sus.
I think a real world kind of pollution pact that nations.
The Kyoto Treaty or whatever.
Oh, yeah. But even though they're very obviously in Tokyo. But yeah, they're talking to the Ministry of Environmentalism, I think. And it doesn't really have anything to do with the rest of the movie.
Well, not only that, but like it is such a bad excuse. Not only that. Okay, Patrick, if you were going to anywhere, I don't even care if you're going to the county over to film a documentary, an actual documentary. And what we're supposed to be watching is the footage that she is shooting for her documentary. Do you think maybe you might get some mics and a full camera, audio equipment of any sort? Or are you just going to record it on your, but essentially your camcorder, and that's it? Because the audio visual in this movie is real bad, and it's not, and I absolutely want to point this out, it is not a byproduct of it being found footage. This is supposed to be a documentary, which means she is supposed to have a semi-professional outfit. Because if you release this footage, like any of this footage, as part of a documentary, you'll end up on YouTube.
But yeah, if you were going to the Ministry of Environmentalism in Japan to interview like an important government person, you would think, yeah, she would have some kind of professional get up going. She is just wearing like jeans and a shirt, right?
Oh yeah, they are cash to the extreme.
Oh boy, and we have to start and talk about some of the terrible errors and plot points in the beginning of the movie. The beginning of the movie shows them packing for January in Japan. The credits we see will say that it's like January so and so, and they talk about how hot it's going to be and if they should bring shorts. And I'm like, in January? Does the filmmaker think it's in the summer, the southern hemisphere, or it is a simple error because all they have to do is change the credits that said, you know, like nowhere in the movie do they say it's January. It's only the title cards between that saying January 23rd or whatever. So all they had to do is change that, but it doesn't make any sense that
it doesn't.
January in Japan
is like January here. It's cold.
Frozen. Yeah. They get snow. So that was one pretty error for the first 5 minutes of the movie.
You know, I was counting down the minutes until someone said we're Americans, and by God, these two girls did not disappoint me at all.
the other error I like to point out is this movie was filmed in late 2007, released in 2008, but it does specifically say it takes place in 2003. Another one of those title card things, and they make reference to YouTube, which didn't start until 2005. But honestly, even if it being filmed in 2007, I was like, how big was YouTube? I was actually impressed that they had that reference there.
So you know? YouTube was, I mean, by 2007 was kind of starting to take off.
They made reference to like watching a tutorial kind of video on YouTube. And I was like, oh, wow. Are they really doing it way back then?
But yeah. I mean,
the movie takes place in 2003. So it's moot. It doesn't exist.
I think YouTube launched in 06. And even by 07, it was starting to really, really kick off. I mean, your first episode of like Marble Hornets is at 09. And that was what kind of the real beginning of like YouTube being super tenable. But like, yeah, people were already starting to figure this out. But yeah, but 2003, dumb.
Well, the other thing, it just doesn't make sense. And honestly, hats off to the Asylum for trying this. How did they mockbust a movie that was so cloaked in secrecy like Cloverfield? Because there's almost like nothing in any of the trailers for Cloverfield to explain what it actually is about. Like, so, did any of the trailers show parts of the monster?
Some of the destruction? Initial teasers.
You get the Statue of Liberty's head being thrown off. Very iconic footage. But
I think it's important to keep in mind that the people that work in the asylum are part of the LA Hollywood system. And that whole system functions very differently from what we have access to. So at that time, it is very likely that someone knew someone that knew someone who had seen the script or had some idea, even though it was cloaked in secrecy to the public. Somebody probably was friends with somebody that like got their eyeballs on this is the kind of movie it's going to be. And we can turn this around real quick.
Yeah. I mean, not a lot of cast and not a lot of CGI going on here.
You could have made this movie in a weekend.
It's very possible. But do you want to talk about the quote unquote titular monster?
I do. But I also want to harp on another found footage commonality that this movie utilizes doesn't need to.
So at first you mentioned the audio was terrible, and I texted that to you when I was watching the movie. I was like, it's absolute dog water. It's terrible. I used the S word.
Describe it
for what it was.
Then
it gets even worse because I'm guessing you're going to talk about the video getting terrible. Oh my God.
I absolutely will, but like legit, if this is what I was harping on, if this is supposed to be a documentary and I can't hear the subject being interviewed for the documentary portion, and let's not even get to the gotcha journalism she's using. Like, I don't care about that. Like,
you didn't send me that question.
he's fine to answer it, because I mean, basically she's trying to press him, like, oh, would Japan like put sanctions on the U.S. if they don't pay attention to these things, because the U.S. hasn't been, which I'm like, you know, hey, at least you're showing some sort of journalistic integrity in terms of like, I want to get an honest answer out of you. But, you know, she's also in her jeans and sandals, and this is supposed to be like a legit documentary, which maybe she shouldn't be in the frame at all.
Short sleeve shirt in January. Yeah.
Yeah. So in most horror found footage films, typically involves the paranormal. And so there is always some sort of, and again, I mentioned Marble Hornets. This is a big part of Marble Hornets. And if you're unfamiliar with Marble Hornets, it was a journalistic YouTube show that helped popularize into the mainstream the internet urban legend figure Slenderman. One of the big things that Marble Hornets and almost every horror-centric found footage uses is this sort of idea that the paranormal presence messes with the video camera in some capacity. So like, you will see some sort of visual interference to indicate that something is about to happen or something is there. And this movie does that for no reason at all.
Yeah, the quality of the camera degrades several times in several different ways for no real reason.
And no, it makes no sense. And even the presence of the monster shouldn't do it.
Yeah, I mean, if they had written that into the script, I mean, they do it too much, and it begins to grate very bad. Like, you thought the audio was going to be a problem, but the...
Oh, no, I can't see or hear.
It's like, maybe that's for the best, but...
I mean, this is an Asylum movie, so yes.
I think putting on some filters and some things when you're showing the monster is perfectly fine to try and obfuscate a little bit. You know, Cloverfield uses some tactics kind of similarly, but not
it does. Really. And we will get to that, because there is one tenant, and they say they're using a tape, which in 2007, it's fully possible they were using a tape. It we'll get to it. It would not have shaken out like that, but I forgive it, because we'll talk about it.
This movie, though, supposedly in real life, they were using quite a bulky camera setup, so they might have been recording on tape.
I would not be surprised if they were recording on tape, to be honest.
But they purposely decided in the editing room to make it look a lot worse in a lot of situations, and there's like there's a lot of things at play here. But
there's moments of static when nothing's happening, and in found footage, it's always a visual way to kind of hint to the audience something is about to happen, or get ready. We have been conditioned since Paranormal Activity to expect that. And this movie, which would have been released a year after Paranormal Activity got its official release, I think it was 2007. Really? Let me double check that. I thought Paranormal. So it did have a year of like touring the country before it got a wide release, but its official release date is 2007. It's official wide release date was 2009. So there's
Record is another foreign
franchise is so good
found footage film, which I absolutely love, and really I think upholds the actual found footage, because it's almost like kind of like, you know,
well, because it's supposed to be like a news
one team. So there's not a lot of what this movie does, which is like they stop recording and they start like later, which is pretty important for the continuity for the audience to understand.
I'm fine with that.
This movie does it well. Cloverfield kind of just skips around, and it's like, you don't care because you're having a good time. This movie, they, you know, talk specifically about like why they're continuing to record and when they stop and when they start. But
Cloverfield does too, to a degree, because there is a moment, and we'll talk about this later, where there is more of a long stretch of record time, but we will talk about the glory of Cloverfield soon.
Yeah,
but I do agree with you.
Talking about Cloverfield does it better.
Boy, howdy do I wish I was watching Cloverfield. I do agree with you. They do a good job of maintaining this sense of continuity. The problem is the footage that we find is not interesting. It is the girls freaking out.
Miles,
and
did you not enjoy the 10 seconds of the titular monster on screen?
Oh, you mean just the octopus like tentacle that we saw?
Yeah, it's
supposed to be an octopus.
Every once in a while you get a tentacle. Yep, that's about it. And, you know, normally I am of the opinion when you're in like a horror movie territory like this, that you don't want to show too much of the monster early on. And I think they do a good job of like, oh, was that I think I saw something in the explosion, mm-hmm. you know, that kind of thing.
The problem is I don't see anything in the explosion.
Oh, yeah, that's the other thing.
That's
something that they actually do in Cloverfield as well. There's like, oh, no, I saw something. And they go back and look at the footage and they're like, what was that? And it's like, I don't know. It was kind of blurry.
But the good thing is in Cloverfield, you do see something in the footage. And
then you eventually see something very close up and you see all kinds of action. That movie is almost set up like a carnival, you know, a crazy theme park ride that you're experiencing along with the cast, which is why it works so well. This one, not so much. You mostly are getting the girls running around, and why they don't just leave, I don't quite understand. Like they're often sheltering and looking for places to hide. There's nothing really stopping them from just
Don't know where to go. That's the problem. They are very much like
walk away from the explosions.
So they do that to a degree, but they are trying to get to the American, American Center and then the American Embassy. And then when they get there, the American Center has been completely obliterated.
Yeah, I forgot.
So they are actively trying, like, I'll give them this. They are trying to get somewhere that makes sense.
I don't want to talk about the logistics of this movie. It's so boring. Everything that happens, Miles, the plot is so bad.
Well, so what I hate is they keep talking about, oh, we have to record everything. And I'm like, you guys have been doing that this entire time. You do not have to, like, tell me what, like, look, as a viewer, as a found footage tenant, I one of my most irritated things in reading reviews or even being given the reasons on screen, I don't care why you're recording. I never will.
Yeah,
like,
I mean,
because one of the things is like, oh, why are they still recording? I don't care. Show me a good time. That's all I care about.
Well, it's so funny because this is really before everyone had cell phone cameras in their pocket that record hours of footage at a time. But like,
it's funny you say that because we'll get to that next week.
Well, yeah, that now it's like second nature. It's like if there was some kind of terrorist attack or kaiju attack, I'm filming the entire thing. I don't care if people are like, put that down and help me run. It's like, I could do
it. It's both. In Cloverfield.
What is?
That moment.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like, why are you doing it? Yeah. It's like, people
Everyone taking their phone out to take a picture.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. Yeah, there's like cameras, and I would kind of do that as well, but
I wouldn't want to absolutely. Also, because, I mean, again, Paranormal Activity had not released wide yet here. Mm. So found footage had not had its big, big comeback yet. So the only, there are really like three movies, four, if you want to be like real specific. You have Cannibal Holocaust, the McPherson Tape, The Lost Broadcast, and then most famously, The Blair Witch Project. The Blair Witch Project has a very famous moment where the main kind of documentarian, Heather Donahue, is making this kind of like front-faced, snotty-nosed confessional. It's like one of the most famous parts of this entire movie. Yeah. And so many people feel like they need to like throw their hat in the ring of this confessional. And we get one that like, they don't even say anything. Like Aaron's like, I'm Aaron. I'm still a virgin. I love you, mom and dad. The end. Like, I was like, what was this?
Yeah. And I mean, this and Cloverfield are very much horror kind of kaiju movies. The difference is I cared when characters died in Cloverfield, and I did not feel anything when any character in this film died.
Here's the wild thing is like there are characters in Cloverfield that you experience for about 15 minutes, if that, and they feel like real people. In this movie, even the main girls we have spent a very long time with don't feel real. And like even these girls who are supposed to have, like this takes place over a few days. They have been going through it. And half the time, they don't look like they have done anything but, like, maybe not done their makeup out of bed.
I mean, all they have to do is establish the sisterly bond, which, I mean, is not, like, an easy thing, but at no point did I feel like they were sisters.
No, in this movie. They feel like really good friends, but they don't... Yeah. They feel like they're, like, sisters from, like, different families or something.
It's all you had to do to establish, like, a good character, you know, for both of them, and like how they, what their hierarchy is. But I honestly could not tell the two characters apart, like almost the entire
thing. No, but like it severely bothered me that these girls, like, well, I mean, from the initial attack, mm-hmm. which, I mean, at first it's like, oh, cool. Like, they think it's an earthquake. Oh, it happens here all the time. A great setup. Phenomenal
yeah.
setup.
Yeah.
To, okay, we're stuck in this, like, I guess some sort of like bunker storage room for 15, 20 minutes of this movie. No one speaks English. That's fine. They're in Japan. I am okay with that. But then some guy named like Josh comes along.
They find a literal
white knight.
Yeah, well, I was like, oh man, I don't want to deal with this guy the rest of the movie. And thankfully, we don't have to deal with him. He dies pretty quickly. I was like, oh wow, they're really.
No, I was pretty happy that Josh bites it. I think is his name Josh?
I can't.
I think it was Josh. He looked like a Josh. Oh,
Justin. And he's Justin. Played by Justin Jones.
Boy. reaching the bottom of the barrel here.
This movie got a 2.1 out of 10 on IMDb. It's got unbelievably 2.5 stars on Letterboxd out of 5, which is like way high.
it's very high. I think there are a lot of people who enjoy the Asylum stuff in a very like, I mean, I'll be honest, like, if I watched this movie with you and we were imbibing, I probably would have had a much better time.
I don't even think that would have saved it. I mean, it's one of those movies. No.
You and me together, and then with our respective spouses, like, it would have been funny. Yeah.
It's so rough to watch. In a audio review, Scott Foy of Dread Central parried the found footage premise by writing a review and performing it, pretending that he was slowly going insane by watching the movie, which is very funny. But my favorite lines from that review, all in caps, were no plot, no drama, no suspense, no monster, no point, no more.
No TV make Homer go crazy.
Yeah. And I kind of agree with them. There's not a lot yes. of suspense. There's not a lot of the monster.
Yeah, I feel bad because, like, I mean, again, we're talking about a point where we have seen a lot of these movies or have been aware of them. And this is a movie that I remember when this came out, because I thought it was funny that they were actively trying. This is the movie that kind of made me start to be really aware of Asylum. And I think I remember being at a Walmart in the middle of the night, because at the time there's nothing to do in Spartanburg, South Carolina, in the middle of the night, then go to Walmart or go to a random bar if you were old enough to get in. And I remember, I think, buying this for like $5 and trying to return it to Walmart, and they would not let me.
No, you did not buy this, did you?
Yeah.
Do you still have it?
No. Okay. I mean,
I was like, digitized. I want to watch that documentary. I know, but you save stuff, man. You're a saver.
I do, but like not trash like this.
That's pretty funny. Yeah, this is one that I probably would have thrown the case out and maybe just kept.
I think I actively left this in some, like, Brian Anderson's dorm or something.
Have fun. This is your problem.
Random call out to someone that no one else knows but like me and Patrick.
Were you still in college when this came out?
Oh, wait.
8? No. Yes.
No, but I was living in the apartment that I was in college. I had in college. So, okay. So it wasn't his dorm, but I definitely left at someone's apartment then.
Yeah. Yeah, $5 might be a bit too much.
It wasn't worth the price of admission, I can tell you that.
Do you want to get to rating this one?
Yeah, no, I feel bad because this has been a pile on, and this is not even a fun one, to be honest, because everything it does so poorly.
I had such high hopes because, honestly, besides some of the technical errors, it started out fairly interesting. I don't know. I don't know what to expect, but I...
But does it start out interesting because you know what it's trying to parody?
Yeah, that might be it. I think this one, I was like, oh, wow, this actually kind of looks like a movie. Coming off of King of the Lost World, I was very impressed. But this movie continued, as we watched it, to make me actively angry, because I was like, they keep messing things up that they didn't have to. It was very much the equivalent of nails on chalkboard for me. So a lot of my hatred, yeah, stems from the fact they could have not done something. Like, they could have actively chosen to leave some of the filters off the video, or, you know, this, that, and the other. And just simple changes would have made this a lot more watchable. My personal enjoyment is very low. It's a 2 out of 10. Miles, what about you? Yeah, I didn't have a good time with this. I thought I was
Patrick. So I am in complete agreement with you. I also gave it a 2 out of 10. As I've stated several times, I'm a big fan of found footage, and I tolerate a lot of mid to low grade found footage stuff. I am someone who has seen all 8 entries in the Blackwell Ghost series, a series that everyone's probably going, huh?
That was me. Yes.
Huh? Yes. I love found footage stuff. This is the exact kind of movie I don't want to find. It is lazy. It is unambitious. It has no heart, soul, which is, again, this is my problem with King of the Lost World. I don't mind trying to cash grab. I don't mind trying to make a buck off of something that's going to be popular, or that you perceive is going to be popular. But man, do it with some panache. Like, say, yeah, don't say we have Cloverfield at home, being like, oh, we got this instead, and make some sort of effort, and they don't. This movie is, I think, commits the biggest cardinal sin. It is so boring. It is such a frustrating watch, and it's not a long one. I mean, it's only like 90 minutes, to a T. And I recently watched, this is a weird comparison, I watched Casino for the first time last week. Uh-huh. It's a 3-hour Martin Scorsese film, and it was easier to sit through than 90 minutes of Monster. And I mean, this isn't like, oh, well, that's a great movie. It's an okay Scorsese film, but it is an active movie that understands how things work in terms of narrative storytelling. And hey, I don't want to make a big claim that Patrick and I could have easily written this in a weekend and done something else. No, but I kind of want to. I feel like you and I could have made a better movie than this.
Honestly,
at least in terms of the narrative.
Yeah, honestly, it's mind-boggling. It kind of feels in parts that they just did not have a script. They just kind of ran with, with what they were filming.
It was a yes and, but they had nothing. I'm 2 out of 10 in my personal enjoyment. The monster also, we didn't talk a lot about it. We just see a tentacle. It's poor.
Yeah, so some of the filming techniques, going on to the technical here, are kind of good. I feel like the use of the found footage, I mean, it's definitely not as good looking as Cloverfield is in parts, but there are parts where, Japanese people are running away from giant tentacles and military are shooting up and a car flies through the frame. There is a good 2 minutes.
There's a production there. Yeah.
There's 2 minutes of good movie in the 80 minutes of the film.
No, you are 100% right.
They put that in the trailer.
No, I totally agree with you, because even despite the fact that the monster looks terrible, because we don't ever really see it, we just see a tentacle. There are some shots, and there are some good production moments where it's like, okay, we had a weekend to grab these folks, and we shot some footage, and it's not bad. In a better movie, it would work. I agree with you completely. I'm sorry. What was your score for technical?
Yeah, because of the terrible audio, the terrible visuals we get. This is also getting a 2 out of 10 for me. I had it at 3, and I was like, technical was one of the worst parts of the movie. So wholly deficient on our scale.
We are locked in this week. I also gave it a 2 for the very same reasons. The audio visual is unforgivable. The characters are completely one-dimensional. It's not necessarily the fact of the actors. I think at least one of them is pretty decent throughout, but they're also given nothing to do. They're given no direction, and that makes them look bad. It's possible they're also bad actors, but it's one of those things where you can't really blame them. The monster tentacle itself is not really satisfying. So from a, there's no, there's some destruction, I guess. You see some things of it coming out of the ground, and it looks justifiably direct to video silly. But I guess in a better movie, it would have worked fine. I would have been oh yeah, they had no money, but they made an attempt. But here, it's everything just it's the opposite of firing on all cylinders. It's like flopping on all cylinders. And I struggle to give it credit for almost anything it's doing.
What about the importance, Miles? Where do you think this stands as on the scale of like all kaiju movies?
So this was a parody of another film. And
well, yeah, it was a mockbuster.
It's a mockbuster. I guess parody is the incorrect word.
Honestly, I got to give him a lot of credit for, you know, with as secret as Cloverfield was, like kind of getting a lot of stuff very close, you know.
I mean, to a degree, but like honestly, rolling the dice on that does not endear me to this movie at all. I honestly, if they had put like just some effort into like just a better narrative. And then even if they couldn't afford to do a full-on monster, like I am down, like as a horror fan, you just want to do a tentacle. You can make a tentacle work.
Yeah.
You can make that scary. You can make it do something. Honestly, some of the best stuff was in the Asian restaurant with the grandpa and the granddaughter. That's some of the best stuff in the entire movie.
Yeah.
And so with good character stuff, this movie could have been something, but no, it's a mockbuster of a much better movie, but it's also a movie that like no one talks about. In fact, if we had not covered that, I don't think anyone would be like, "Oh, well, you didn't do Monster.
How dare you?"
So I am at a 2 out of 10 here. I don't think it adds anything to the annals of kaiju cinema. I don't think it missing would have done anything.
Yeah,
and I'm 2 here.
Yeah, I think this is worse slightly than King of the Lost World or other silent film we watched, even though I think this is a better mockbuster. You know, it's like closer to the original or what they're trying to do, because honestly King of the Lost World was more Lost show, but
right,
this is still not very important. I feel like you can kind of get rid of it, and it would make it a lot easier because there's also a movie called Monsters with kind of kaiju in them that
we'll
watch, and it can
honestly be, I briefly like glossed over our list and I thought that's what we're gonna watch next, and I was super excited, and you're like, no dude, that's later, and no, we're watching the Asylum movie, and I had a big sad
gosh. When is Monsters?
The 2012? Monsters
of 2010, so we got a couple years here in 2008. Right, so means we're both at solid twos, 2 out of 10, and that makes our podcast
fine. Two kaboom!
Yeah, 6 twos across the board, make 1 big 2. Pretty bad movie, but
yeah, not a whole lot to say about this week.
I am glad we watched this one before the actual film, because it does give you. I mean, it's like having, you know, a purposely bad opening act so you get more cheers when you come out on stage.
It's like, here's William Hung, and now you can listen to Taylor Swift.
Oh, my goodness. Can you imagine that dynamite duo? How many
tickets? That would be amazing.
Honestly, she should try to book like the most untasteful opening act to see if it'll stop all of her tickets from selling out in 5 minutes.
I know, it's like I know you got Sabrina Carpenter who's having her own moment right now, but like, how about let's put someone who's going to stop things.
Okay. Well, yeah. Email us at kaijuversushistory@gmail.com if you want to talk Asylum or terrible films, or find us at kaijuversushistory.com on social medias at kaijuversushistory. Rate and review our show more than 2 stars out of 5, and check out our letterbox where you can see our 5-star format reviews for films. This one will be getting 1 star out of 5. Yes, that's the math. 1 star out of 5, which is honestly one of our lower films. I think this will definitely cracks the top 10 of our worst kaiju films, but
deservedly so.
Miles, where are we going? We already talked like 8 times about what's happening last week, but
sometimes we talk about things where it's not a couple episodes, you know, ahead of time. But yes, thank you, Patrick, and thank you, listeners. And we're gonna catch you next time, where we are gonna be feasting with the amazing Hollywood film that this movie sought to cash in, as J.J. Abrams produces a film from future Batman director Matt Reeves, and a mysterious puzzle of a movie that puts an American spin on the kaiju genre. Tune in next week for History versus Cloverfield.